It's a Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. By now, you've heard quite a bit about the death of Harper Lee, the Pulitzer Prize-winning author of To Kill a Mockingbird and Go Set a Watchman, published decades later. Harper Lee was 89, and her passing was announced just before we went on the air on Friday, so this is our soonest opportunity to remember the great woman so many of us feel a personal connection to. Many of us read To Kill a Mockingbird as assigned reading in grade school and fell in love with the story, which was made into a movie in 1962 starring Gregory Peck as Atticus Finch. I feel a particularly strong connection to Harper Lee, having interviewed Mary Badham, the young actress who played Scout in the movie, during a One City, One Book event. And last year, I had the opportunity to play Atticus in the Heritage Players production of Mockingbird and to enjoy the experience of climbing inside of his skin and walking around in it. I'm joined now by Pittsburgh Post-Gazette book review editor Tony Norman, who wrote the piece looking back on Lee's legacy entitled "She Wrote the Novel We All Read in High School." Good day, Tony Norman.
Hey, how you doing, Paul?
Good, thank you. Thanks for joining us. And
all right.
We'd like to hear from you, our listeners, about your memories of Harper Lee the first time you read To Kill a Mockingbird. You've probably, if you're like me, read it more than once. But how did it impact your life? And what are your thoughts and memories and questions for Tony about Harper Lee? 412-246-2002 is the number to call. That's 412-246-2002. Email esspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at esspgh. Tony, was that the starting point for you when you read it in high school, remembering when you first read To Kill a Mockingbird?
Well, it had an impact on me, as it does on most people, and I think at the time I was really struggling with those questions anyway, because of Roots was the TV series had been on. I read To Kill a Mockingbird fairly late in the game. You know, it was like after Roots, so it would have been like 77, 78 or so, pretty late in my teen years. In many ways, I might have thought, man, this book doesn't go far enough, but have since, appreciated it more for its stinging critique of racism in a small town. And I understand it a lot more now, and I understand the context a lot more. But I think at the time, as a teenager, I think I wanted something that was more hard-hitting. But I realize now that there's nothing more hard-hitting than this book, because it insinuates itself into the brains of the readers, and readers walk away from that saying, you know what, she has a point. Whereas if she had been didactic with the story and been more of a in your face with it, it would have turned off more people than it would have, converted. And so I appreciate her subtle art and making the story accessible and making the issue of justice seem palatable to people who otherwise might have glanced over it.
And so I had a question here about how did it impact your life, but it sounds like the impact sort of came maybe a little later for you.
Yeah, so I'm one of those folks who was sort of hard-headed and didn't appreciate it fully until I read critical essays about it and then picked it up again and read it. I think I went through a whole like Mark Twain phase where I was reading all things Mark Twain, and I read an article that was highly appreciative of To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee, and I thought, well, let me see what this writer is talking about. And so that's how I learned to appreciate it. I think it really took some mediation on the part of another writer to get me looking at direction. And of course, when you have expert help like that, it's like, well, of course, this makes total sense now. So,
and this book came out in the early 60s, or 1960, in fact.
Right.
At a time when we were right in the heart of the civil rights struggle in America, and a lot changed in that decade, but this was before all that happened. So
right.
How do you feel, Tony, that To Kill a Mockingbird changed the conversation America was having about race?
Well, I think that the depiction of the characters, and it was, I mean, other than Tom, who is the one who's on trial, the black man on trial, all the characters are white. And to a certain extent, it is an unrelenting look at the archetypes of the South. It's unsentimental. I mean, when you look at the villains in the piece, you know, I'm blanking on the father's name. You should remember it, since you were in the play, the very good play you were in last year, by the way.
Thank you.
You know, the villain of the piece and his daughter, you know, those were folks that we all recognized. We recognized the good people. We had aspirations to be like Atticus Finch and Scout and so forth. And I think giving, in a sense, white Americans, you know,
and you were Tony, you were referring to Mr. Ewell.
Yeah,
Mayella Ewell's dad. Yeah, who is like the extreme villain in the whole thing.
Yeah, the extreme villain. You know, people recognize that. People recognize themselves or what they want to be in all the characters. And it was in such a gently told story, you know. It was at no point super, super violent, or it wasn't about insurrection or overthrowing anything. And I think it sort of got to the comfort level of people. It made people feel at ease as they read it, like at least that, you know, they would not be held personally accountable for anything. Whereas, ironically, you know, Go Set a Watchman, you know, the book that was just published last summer, is much more of an uncomfortable encounter with race, written by the same author. In fact, had she had her, you know, druthers, it would have been the book that we actually read, which is much more of a didactic, much more of a realistic portrait of American racism. And I think that the editors realized very wisely that it would not have gone over very well. It would have sunk like a stone had it been released, you know, in its original form. And Mockingbird is a considerable revision of that original manuscript, you know, Go Set a Watchman. So you don't hear many people talking about that book. You know, I mean, everyone owns it, and maybe most people have read it, but it doesn't resonate the same way. Because it doesn't allow for a measure of American innocence while reading it, you know, or white American innocence. You know, you can't walk away from that feeling that you're a good person too, because you identify more with Scout and Atticus Finch than you did with, you know, Bob Ewell. You know, this is a book that sort of implicates the entire South, and it implicates Atticus Finch. So it's a much different experience than what Americans are used to when it comes to this beloved book and these beloved characters.
We're talking with Tony Norman, who is the book review editor for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, about Harper Lee and her legacy. And there's still time for you to join the conversation at 412-246-2002. If you have a memory or a comment you'd like to share about Harper Lee, again, 412-246-2002. Tony, I think they're just interested in hearing what you have to say. And I must ask you, why do you suppose that Harper Lee agreed to the release of Go Set a Watchman? Thinking about it now that she has passed, did she maybe see, and there's some disagreement about whether she did actually agree, but assuming that she did, was there maybe a thought in her mind that I'm coming to the end of my life and I want this to come out before I die?
I think that's exactly it, Paul. And I also think that as much as she appreciated her revision of that original manuscript, she probably had to be dragged into it. She probably was dragged kicking and screaming in many ways, because she had spent a considerable amount of time on Go Set a Watchman. And there's a certain amount of authorial pride, you know? I mean, you spend 6 years working on something, and then you take it, you know, to the publishers, and they say, yeah, this has potential, but why don't we go back to the drawing board and let's now, you know, instead of the flashbacks being flashbacks, that'll be the main story. This thing will take place in, you know, during the Depression in the small southern town, and so this means you'll have to pretty much scrap 90% of what you wrote and begin again. And this time, you know, you'll do it under the gaze of, you know, an experienced editor who will react to it. And she probably felt, you know, well, okay, the final product obviously is transcendent and, you know, world dominating and the number one novel, you know, in American 20th century literature. But in the back of her head, she was probably thinking, darn it, I wonder what people would have thought of what I originally wrote. I bet you they would have liked that too. But she was probably discouraged from putting it out by her sister all those years. Her sister died, and then her lawyer came across the manuscript, and it was like, hey, why don't we put this thing out? And I'm sure from the lawyer's perspective and from the publisher's perspective, it was all about the dollar signs and the legacy and so forth. But for Harper Lee, it was probably just a measure of vindication. She probably felt, you know, I never did put out a second book. I worked on another novel and it just didn't work out and this and that. And this thing's just sitting here. I mean, they're just going to put it out anyway when I die. They're going to figure out a way to do it. So why don't I just stick around long enough to see what the reaction to this book is? Because, you know, I think I would get a kick out of that.
I have to ask you, we're running low on time, but the Pittsburgh-born writer Albert French was asked to write an introduction for the later editions of To Kill a Mockingbird. And apparently Harper Lee insisted that he do it and that only he could do it. Why do you suppose that was in a minute or less here?
Albert French is a brilliant, brilliant novelist. And I believe that she must have, this is speculation, she must have read his book, Billy, which is a novel about the execution of a 10-year-old boy in Mississippi for murdering a white girl. That's very similar in many ways in tone to Kill a Mockingbird. And she must have been taken with that novel and taken with Albert French's depiction of the Old South and must have felt that he was a peer, which is an amazing tribute to the great Albert French.
Okay, and in 15 seconds or so, who's going to be the next Harper Lee?
I would hope it would be me. I'm working on a novel now. But other than me, I have no idea.
All right, well, Tony, that's something we will very much look forward to.
Okay, Paul.
Good luck with that, and thank you again for joining us and for your very fine review of The Life of Harper Lee. Again, if you missed it, it was in Saturday's Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And entitled, She Wrote the Novel We All Read in Junior High, Remembering Harper Lee, April 1926 to February 2016. Tony Norman, who is the book review editor for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you, Paul.
And thank you for listening to Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. Tomorrow on the show, Pittsburgh Symphony conductor Maestro Manfred Honeck is our guest, talking about the 120th anniversary of the Pittsburgh Symphony. That's tomorrow. Until then, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.